Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Gillian. Good morning. It is great to be back at the London Screen Academy to celebrate the global powerhouse that is our film and television industry. From Star Wars to Game of Thrones, 007 to Top Gun Maverick, you name it, we make it. And in fact, right here is where we're training up the next generation of BAFTA winners, the producers, set designers, visual effects specialists, who are going to ensure that the UK remains one of the most creative countries in the whole world. Now, the reason I've come here to talk about maths is not just because I like maths, but because what I'm setting out today is a fundamental part of how we need to change our country for the future. Now, one of my five priorities is economic growth. And if we are going to grow our economy, not just over the next 2 years, but the next 20, we simply cannot allow poor numeracy to cost our economy tens of billions a year, or to leave people twice as likely to be unemployed as those with competent numeracy. So we have to fundamentally change our education system so it gives our young people the knowledge and skills they need and that our businesses need to compete with the best in the world. And there's no better example of that than in our creative industries. Because what's the biggest skill shortage holding our film industry back? Well, as you heard from Gillian, it's a shortage of technical skills. And so what have the London Screen Academy put on the curriculum for their 16 to 19-year-olds? Maths. Why? Because you can't make movies without maths. You can't make visual effects without vectors and matrices. You can't design a set without some geometry. You can't run a film production company without being financially literate. And that's not just true of our creative industries. It's true of so many of our industries. In healthcare, maths allows you to calculate dosages. In retail, data skills allow you to analyze sales and calculate discounts. And the same is true in all our daily lives, from managing household budgets to understanding mobile phone contracts or mortgages. Now, we also know the benefit of maths for employability and earnings. Even just basic numeracy skills can increase your earnings by around £1,600 a year. So put simply, without a solid foundation in maths, our children risk being left behind, shut out of careers they aspire to and the lives that they want to lead. Now, in the last decade or so, we've gone up 10 places in the international league tables, and maths has become the most popular of all A-levels. But it's still the case that the UK is one of the least numerate countries in the developed world. More than 8 million adults have numeracy skills below those expected of a 9-year-old, and around a third of our young people don't pass maths GCSE. Now, it's not that we're not just good enough at maths. There's a cultural issue here too. I'll be honest, when my two young daughters first heard me talk about them doing more maths, they weren't too excited. And that's just it. We make jokes about not being able to do maths. It's socially acceptable. We say things like, oh, maths, I can't do that, it's not for me, and everyone laughs. But we'd never make a joke like that about not being able to read. So we've got to change this anti-maths mindset. We've got to start prizing numeracy for what it is, a key skill every bit as essential as reading. So my campaign to transform our national approach to maths is not some nice to have. It's about changing how we value maths in our country and changing the way our education system works to deliver it so that all our children get these vital skills for life. Now, parents and teachers listening to this will want to know what that means for our children today. So let me tell you. We're in the process of making maths more accessible, building our children's confidence so that they don't fear maths. We're creating more sector-specific content that can excite young people about the relevance of maths for the careers that they aspire to help teachers bring maths to life in the classroom, from building sets for school plays to calculating the angles of free kicks or the speed of a Formula One car. We're extending our maths hubs, unique partnerships of expert schools that support maths teaching. And we're strengthening maths in primary schools, including with a new, fully funded professional qualification for those that are teaching it. But we also need to address a very specific problem that's causing us to fall behind the rest of the world. We're one of the few developed countries where young people don't routinely study some form of maths up to the age of 18. They do it in Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Finland, Japan, Norway, and America. Why should we accept any less for our children? Of course we shouldn't. That's why I set out in January that we're going to change the way our system works so that everyone in our country will study some form of maths all the way to 18. But let me be absolutely clear. I am not saying that the answer is A-level maths for everyone. But we do need to work out the maths our young people should study. So we're going to look at what 16 to 18-year-olds around the world are learning. And we're going to listen to employers and ask them what they say the math skills are that they need. And that's why today I'm appointing a new expert group who will help us identify the core maths content that our 16 to 18-year-olds need and whether we need a new specific qualification to support that. But to repeat, that will not be A-level maths for all. And let me also be clear that we're not going to deliver this change overnight. We're going to need to recruit and train the maths teachers. We're going to work out how to harness technology that we need to support them. And we'll need to make sure that this maths is additional to other subjects, not instead of them. Just as here at the London Screen Academy, they don't teach maths instead of the arts. They teach both because they are complementary, not contradictory. So it will take time to implement this change. But we are taking the first step today by identifying the maths content that will give our 16 to 18-year-olds the skills they need to get on in life. And when we have that, then we'll come back with a detailed plan to deliver it. I'll just finish on a personal note. Every opportunity that I've had in life began with the education that I was so fortunate to receive. And maths was a critical part of that. Now, I knew it was important then. And when I look at how the world is changing, it's only going to be more important for my children and yours. So I won't sit back and allow this cultural sense that it's okay to be bad at maths to put our children at a disadvantage. We've got to change this. We've got to value maths and what it can do for our children's futures. Giving our children a world-class education is the single most important thing we can do. It's the closest thing we have to a silver bullet, the best economic policy, the best social policy, the best moral policy. And that's why I'm proud that it's our policy, and I will never stop striving to achieve it. Thank you. Thank you. Right, thanks very much. Now, we've got time for a good bunch of questions. So before we get to the media, I was going to see. Now, do you guys have any questions to start with? And then we'll see who else has some.
I've got a question. You mentioned that A-level maths isn't for everyone. So will we see like more kind of diversity in the different types of maths courses that we could potentially do post-16?
Brilliant. That is exactly what we're going to see. And I think when I first announced this in January, everyone was very panicked that it meant A-level maths for everybody. And that's why I wanted to be crystal clear that it's not. Now, it's great, though, that let's recognise, you know, more and more people are taking A-level maths. And as Gillian will remind us, it is now the most popular A-level. Right? So it's a sign of progress. But what we're announcing today is a new expert group of people drawn from academia, from business, from all sorts of walks of life, from education. And they're going to help us figure out exactly what that content should be. And one way we're going to look at that is by talking to businesses and say, in all these different industries, what are the type of math skills that you value and that you need? And we're going to look around the world, because as I pointed out, we're literally one of the very few developed countries where we don't have our children study maths up to 18. So we're going to look around at all those countries I mentioned and say, well, what are all their students studying between 16 and 18? Because that should give us a rough sense of what you need. And we'll put those two things together, and then we'll say, aha, this is it. And it won't be A-level maths. It will be something different. And then we'll figure out how to deliver that. So you're exactly right. So hopefully that sounds good and gives you some reassurance as well. Right, who's next? Anyone else? All good? No others from you? Anyone else have some questions before we get over to the media? Okay, gosh, this is very quiet. Anyway, actually, I'll broaden up. Do you have any questions on things that are not related to maths? I'm also fine for those. All fine? Right, okay, well, we'll turn to the media for some questions. So we start with the BBC.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Chris Mason, BBC News. You talked today about an aspiration, but with very little detail. And yet, the context is one where, for many pupils and parents, there's going to be further disruption to their education with strikes coming up, as well as the prospect of strikes going on for months and months ahead in the NHS. Shouldn't the strikes and sorting them out quickly be your priority?
Right, thanks, Chris. So, lots in there. The first thing to say is let's talk about what's going on in schools. And there'll be some teachers here. And the first thing I want to say, and Gillian would echo this, is that I think our teachers do an incredible job. I think you probably heard from what I said earlier. I think delivering a world-class education system is about the most important thing that we can do for our children's futures and for our country. And that starts with having the best teachers. I think all the research tells you that. Our own experience as parents tells you that. The most transformative thing for a child's education is the quality of the teaching, and that's why it's right that we respect, we revere, and we support our teachers, and I'm so grateful to them for the incredible job they do. And that's why we worked really hard to find a way to come to what I thought was a reasonable and fair settlement on pay. And it represented about an 8% increase for most teachers, around a 13% increase for new teachers, taking their starting salary up to £30,000 over the course of the next year, which is something that we'd committed to do a couple of years ago, and I'm pleased that we're able to deliver that. But it's not also just about the money. One of the things that we hear a lot from teachers is about workload and finding ways to reduce that. So what we'd actually worked out with the unions, and Gillian did a great job, is identifying ways to reduce the workload by about 5 hours a week. And so put together, we thought that that was a reasonable and fair package in the circumstances. So obviously I'm disappointed. And as I said, I don't want our kids' education to be disrupted. I think no one wants to see that. Our door is always open, and we continue to hope that we can find a way through. But as I say, that's the situation on that. And we are able to focus on that. But it's also right that we look to the future. It's also right that we think about our kids and how we can make sure that they can fulfill all the opportunities ahead of them, live the lives that we want them to live, make sure they can enter every career, compete with everyone around the world, go about their daily lives, getting their mortgage, figuring out the discounts, all the things I talked about. That's fundamental to building a strong country and a strong society, and it's right that we put in bed the plans for that. I admit, as I said, not going to happen overnight, right? This is a big long-term reform, but we're taking the first step today, and as brilliant first question was about, it's about figuring out, well, what's the content? And once we've got the content right, then I can come back and then talk to you about, well, what does that mean for the new teachers, how we're going to teach the course, and then how we're going to roll it out. But it's the first step on that journey. Look, on the NHS, look, I think let's start with the positive news, right? Slightly lost, I think. The positive news is that the union with the largest number of NHS workers, Unison, actually voted to accept and support the New Deal that we put forward, right? And I think people might have not quite got that over some of the coverage. You know, NHS workers are represented by about half a dozen different unions, and the largest one of those, as I said, voted to accept the deal, and not just by a little bit, overwhelmingly, by almost 3-1. I think, from the numbers that I saw. I think that's a good, very positive step, and I'm really grateful to them for that, and more generally grateful to all our fantastic NHS workers for the job that they do, particularly coming out of the pandemic, as we know it's been challenging. And again, similar to what I was saying on schools, that's why we worked really hard to put in place what we thought was a reasonable, fair, responsible pay settlement. And I'm actually pleased that those union leaders recommended that deal to their members, and the RCN leadership actually said that the government had made progress in the talks, improved the offer, and they went and recommended that offer to their members. And you can see that, I think, in the narrow nature of the vote. Kind of, I think it was 54-46, so it was a very narrow vote rejecting the pay offer. And indeed, when you look at the turnout, it's a minority of members of that union who are voting to strike. And I think, voting to strike with no derogations, given the closeness of the vote, is obviously disappointing. And, I think everyone will be concerned about the impact on patient care. But as I said, our door is always open to have talks, and there are other unions who are currently in the process of balloting their members. And, hopefully they can see that the offer that we put forward is a reasonable one that recognises their hard work and the contribution they make, and also recognises that we have to do these things in a way that's affordable for taxpayers, but also gets inflation down. Right. It's the first one of my priorities to halve inflation. That's because all of you in this room, everyone watching, is impacted by the cost of living and what they're seeing with their bills. And I think we all share a desire to ease that burden, and that means being disciplined as well, so we can get inflation down, ease the burden on bills, and that's what we're going to do. Right. Can I turn to Skye next?
Thank you, Prime Minister. Beth Rigby from Sky News. Prime Minister, you talked about your excellent independent education and the way in which that built your maths abilities. You also said a third of kids fail maths at GCSE, and you said that this was a cultural issue, but isn't it a provision issue? Because nearly half of maths teachers around secondary schools here in Islington or in Hackney next door, they don't have a specialised maths teacher at state school teaching the maths, not 16 to 18, but up to GCSE. So I put it to you, for parents listening to this today, wouldn't it be better if, as Prime Minister, you actually gave a commitment that kids would be given the tools in state schools to pass maths GCSE and make a commitment to that and fix the basics before you talk about the next steps? Because for many parents, they can't even get a good state school maths teacher for their secondary school kids. Thanks.
The good news is we're doing both, right? And that's positive. Of course, we can't wait till 16. We've got to make sure that we not only change the culture of how we approach maths as a society, and that's something that's pervasive and will take time, but we're starting actually at primary school. And I highlighted a couple of the great things that Nick and Gillian are doing. One of them is something called Maths Hubs. And we now have 40 of these hubs, which are specialist schools that help train other schools in how to teach maths at primary. And they work. Actually, we know the evidence tells us they work, or the research tells us that they work. And we're rolling that out. So actually, over the course of this parliament, we'll get to around, I think Nick will correct me, about 3/4 of all primary schools. And so that's a great innovation. I talked about the curriculum changes we're making just to help make the content more engaging. And I remember talking to a fantastic maths teacher, who was using, I think, free, as I mentioned in my speech, actually talking about football and free kicks to teach time and distance and angles. And it's things like that that actually really help. But also, you talked about teachers at primary school. We're rolling out a brand new MPQ for maths teachers. And it's going to be fully funded, so no cost to the teachers. And that will really help. It'll be voluntary, but it'll be very supportive of the teachers who are doing exactly the job that you mentioned, Beth, which is so important, and they deserve our support. And those are some of the building blocks that we've put in place to do that. And look, I'd make the point that we have made progress. We've moved up 10 points in the international rankings, but we need to do more. I think if you look at what Nick did previously in phonics in particular, our track record on this stuff is great, right? In 2012, Nick will correct me, I think less than 60% of our six-year-olds had the proficient standard in reading. But because we reformed and put a lot of focus and attention to it, that now is well over 80% and increasing. So look, we know we can do this when we focus on it properly, and we're going to bring that same discipline and focus to maths. And you're right, it will start at primary school. We're already getting on with that. And we'll also look at the long-term reforms for post-16.
So you think previous Conservative governments dropped the ball on maths when a third of kids are failing maths GCSE?
No, actually, if you look at it, this has been a long-term pervasive issue. As I said, we've actually just made progress over the last decade or so. We've moved up 10 points. points in the international rankings for maths. We're rolling out maths hubs. We're rolling out the new MPQ. And we're actually, I think Nick will correct me, but multiplication tables for the first time we just did in this last year, actually. So we have made lots of progress. And look, if you look at what's going on in reading in particular, it's been extraordinary. But we're gonna also shift and make sure that we emphasise maths more than we've done in the past. But that cultural thing has been, as I said, it's been pervasive for a long time in our country. That won't change overnight, but all of us can play a part in helping to change it over time. Great, we go to ITV next.
Thank you. Romilly Weeks, ITV News. Prime Minister, when children's education is being disrupted because of the strikes, when people's operations are being cancelled, their care compromised because of strikes, isn't the most pressing maths problem of the moment what formula you are going to come up with for ending them? And do you acknowledge there is going to have to be more money put on the table?
Well Romilly, not to repeat too much what I said before, but there has been more money put on the table, significant more money. And in fact, that was recognised by the unions, in particular by the leadership of the Nurses Union, the RCN, at the time that we announced the agreement. And I think it's important for people to recognise that, right? The union leaders actually supported the pay deal. They recognised that it was a big step forward from where we were, that it did put new money on the table, that it was progress, and that's why they recommended it to their members. And as I said, the largest union for NHS workers has accepted the deal, or their members have overwhelmingly, and we still have other unions that are left to vote. So I think we should let that process play out, and you know, as I said, people will hopefully go over the numbers and see that it does represent a good and fair settlement in the circumstances. And it's also not just about pay, as I said, for teachers. You know, we're keen to see where we can work with them to reduce the workload and make progress. But look, you know, we remain committed to finding way through these things. I think people can see actually over the past month or two that we can sit down and have reasonable and constructive conversations and negotiations, and we'll continue to take that attitude going forward. Next, Times Radio.
Good morning, Prime Minister. Lucy Fisher from Times Radio. You've said this morning that it will take time to implement the Maths to 18 policy. Can you give any rough timescale of when you'd like to see that start? And secondly, I wanted to ask you about NHS waiting lists, which you've vowed to bring down and to reduce the time that patients are waiting for treatment. Last week, official NHS England figures showed waiting lists have gone up, not down, reaching a new record high of 7.22 million people waiting for routine hospital operations. Health strikes are predicted only to exacerbate the backlog. So are you losing hope that you can successfully cut NHS waiting lists?
Thanks, Lucy. On the first one, about the timing for this, so we're expecting the group to come back to us about July with a kind of sense of what's the curriculum that we should be looking at for 16 to 18. And then once we have that, then I think you'd expect us later in the year to be able to then come back and say, well, this is how we will implement it, over what timescale, and we want to get it right. But that's the rough timescale on the next steps of this. But look, you can't rush something like this. It's a big reform, and it's important that we get it right. And that's why first we need to figure out what it is that we need the curriculum to be. And once we know that, then we can think about, well, what does that mean for teachers? How can we use technology? And what's the pace at which this can be rolled out? And on waiting lists, yes, it's really important to me that we cut NHS waiting lists. That's why it's there as one of my five priorities. Now, I set out a few ways that was going to happen, how we were going to measure ourselves. You know, last year we hit the first of those targets, which was to practically eliminate the number of people waiting 2 years for treatment, which is obviously unacceptable. So that was done and accomplished. It's spring this year, I said that we would practically eliminate those waiting a year and a half for their treatment. And I said we were on track to do that. The industrial action obviously makes that more challenging, but we're pushing hard to meet that target. And then what I said is that by spring of next year, we would aim to virtually eliminate the one-year waiters, but also at that point have the overall waiting list falling. Right, so that's the kind of timescale that I set out for those. And I said the next one is, you know, people waiting a year and a half, making sure that we eliminate those practically this spring. And we're working really hard to do that. I'm really grateful to everyone in the NHS who has been working exceptionally hard to focus on that. And we're going to do that in a range of different ways. I do remain hopeful. Right, of course, industrial action makes these things more challenging, but we're making sure that all the extra money that we've put in the NHS, and remember it is billions and billions of pounds, extra that we've put in the NHS and social care over the next couple of years is spent really well on driving down the waiting list. So whether that's new community diagnostic centres, easy one-stop shops to get all the diagnostics you need, whether it's new elective surgical hubs where we concentrate specialty elective activity, whether it's we work with those trusts that are not doing as well as others and learn and pass that best practice around. There's lots of different initiatives that we've got which are going to help us bring those waiting lists down, and something that I'm focused on and I'm going to continue to make sure we deliver. But look, of course industrial action makes that more challenging, but we're going to keep going at it because it's important to the country. Next, The Sun.
Thank you. Jack Hussle from The Sun. Prime Minister, at the age of 16, you can join the army, but under your plans, you won't be able to decide whether to drop maths. Isn't forcing people to study a subject they loathe just chucking good money away? And secondly, if I may, do you support changing the name of the Brecon Beacons, or is it just virtue signalling?
So on this thing about forcing, I think that like, that's actually literally coming at it the wrong way. So I think you ask yourself, why is it that virtually every other developed country in the world thinks that it's the right thing for their children to be studying some form of maths up to 18, right? And if you look at it, why is it that we're not doing as well as I think we all want to do when it comes to numeracy in our country today? And then you've got to ask yourself, is that right? And I don't think anyone could justify that, right? And it's not good for anybody. And it's actually disproportionately not good for those who are more disadvantaged. It means it's more likely for them to not have a job. It's more likely that they're missing out on £1,600 a year of extra earnings. Now, I don't want that. I don't think you want that. I don't think anyone wants to see that, right? So I think it's right that we try and see if we can address that. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to do it carefully, and we're going to make sure that we get the curriculum right. And as I said, it's not about forcing everyone to do maths A-level, right? But it's about making sure that they study the right form of maths. And it's about changing the culture, and that's incredibly important. And I actually reflecting, when I first announced this in January, I saw some of the reaction to it. And I thought that actually spoke to this kind of anti-maths mindset that we've got to challenge a little bit, right? And I'm just, this is not about if setting up this false contest between, well, do you do creative subjects or you do maths, as you guys do brilliantly here, you do both, right? And most careers and most industries are going to require both. And it can't be socially acceptable or culturally acceptable for us not to value maths in the way that we currently do. And, I think if you've got 5 minutes, I urge everyone to spend 5 minutes this evening on the National Numeracy website. And this charity, he does really excellent work in this area that I came across a little while ago when I was Chancellor. And there's some really powerful research, case studies, examples of the challenges we face around changing this culture around maths. And I think it's actually, had an impact on me and just when I was out and about. And I think if you spend 5 minutes on that website and read some of the things about that, you'll see why this is so important and why we all need to work together to try and bring about this change. And then lastly, if I go to the Telegraph. Sorry? On the Brecon Beacons. God, I haven't seen it, so I've kept back to you on it. Right, so I missed that. Sorry, in all my prep for this. Telegraph.
Thanks, Prime Minister. Dominic Penner on the Daily Telegraph. The consensus across the sector has been broadly supportive, but people are saying that more specialist teachers and more funding is needed. How much more funding are you prepared to put into these reforms, and would that be new money or existing money from elsewhere? And what do you actually plan to do to win the argument around maths other than just extend it to 18? How do you plan? What arguments would you make to change that anti-maths mindset?
Yeah, no, great couple to finish on, Dominic, so thank you. So look, firstly on teachers, yes, look, we need already, and we will need more maths teachers, and we know that. And as I was doing all the work for this over the past few months with Nick and Gillian, I was kind of going over, we actually have an enormous amount of support in place for STEM graduates to become maths teachers and other STEM teachers, actually. And that's sort of worth recapping it, because I'm not sure everyone is aware. So now if you're coming from one of those backgrounds, you can get a tax-free bursary worth up to £27,000. To take your teacher training, right? So that's I think most people will see that that's a significant sum to kind of incentivize you to come from those backgrounds, tax-free, to go and do teacher training in these subjects. But we don't stop there. We don't stop there. In these particular subjects like maths and other STEM subjects, and in particular parts of the country where there are shortages or we really want to add extra help, if you go and work in those subjects or in those areas, you can get extra payments worth around £5,000 a year, tax-free, for around 5 years. And that all comes on top of your starting salary, which is going up to £30,000. So those are some of the things that we've got in place, because you're right, we need to attract more people into these STEM areas. And those are some of the provisions that we've put in place. As I said, £27,000 tax-free, birth-free when you're training to become a teacher. And then on top of that, payments worth up to £5,000 a year for the first few years. Because all the evidence tells us it's those early years that are so important to keeping teachers in the profession. And that's why we focus on raising the starting salary. It's why we focus these extra payments on those early career teachers. And look, it is making a difference and things are improving, but we've got work to do there, and that's why, as I said, when we come back with a more detailed implementation plan for this, we'll be able to look at, well, what does that mean for future maths needs? But I also think it's not just about money. It's as we change the culture and more people study maths, you know, we'll get a virtuous circle, actually, because there'll be a bigger pool of people to be able to draw from to teach these subjects. Your second question is about how do we change the culture, right, which is really important. As I said, everyone should spend 5 minutes on the National Numeracy website when they get home today. But I think it's about, you know, it's about, first of all, with content in primary schools, and that is about giving teachers the confidence to teach it. And that's why the maths hubs are so important, and this new MPQ we're going to roll out is so important. Because if the teachers are confident, then it makes a big difference on the kids. And then part of what making the teachers confident and making the kids engaged is having the curriculum that is engaging. And as I said, and Gillian did brilliantly in her opening remarks, it's all the things where you are doing maths, but you don't quite realise you're doing maths. And it's making our curriculum reflective of that. And as I said, like, you know, much more fun to learn about how a free kick than it is probably to do time and distance equations or angles, right? And it's things like that which increasingly we are putting into the curriculum that I think you can see children responding to really well. And then it's about us having a conversation as a country, right, about us just changing how we approach this so it isn't okay to say, well, I don't do maths and everyone laughs, right? That doesn't happen overnight, right? And I think all of us have probably, if we're being honest with ourselves, all of us have been in a conversation where that has happened. And it is okay, but as I said, not a single person here would kind of proudly proclaim, well, I can't read or I don't do reading, that's not me, right? And we just should be honest with ourselves about that. Now, you know, that's on all of us to slightly change this. And as I said, when I saw the reaction to this announcement when we made it in January, I could see that, right? And I think the last thing I'd say is making people realise it's not an either or. And I know I mentioned this point before, but it's so important. There is this idea that we should do more of this and therefore less of that. No, this needs to be additional. It's complementary. We can do both things together. And if we get this right, I tell you, if we get this right, right, we will do something really special for our young people, right? It will be setting them up for success, not just in their careers, whatever they want to do, whatever you want to do, whether it's go and make the next Harry Potter or whatever, right? But also just going about your day-to-day lives, making sure that you can live a fulfilling life. All those big financial things that impact your day-to-day life, right? Think about the cost of living, how important it is right now to understand what discounts are available. How do you make sure that your credit cards are being managed properly? What's the right mortgage deal to go for? All these things, so important for day-to-day life. And right now, there's probably too many people who don't have the numeracy they need to make those decisions that will support them and their families. But if we get this right, they will be able to. And I think that's something that we can all look forward to and celebrate. Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be with you. Thank you.